Good afternoon, everyone. We'd like to welcome you to the City Council study session for the afternoon of November the 4th. All of our council are present. The first item on our agenda for this meeting is to review the agenda for our meeting upstairs that follows this meeting. So council, please take a look at that agenda. I know we talked about it Thursday. Has anything caught your attention that you'd like more information on or a presentation on prior to
questions on
off of the consent?
8A. Yes.
I'm sorry?
8A.
8A, okay.
Can we get budget to come up? Are we able to pull up the Enterprise Fund financial forecast document that's attached to 8A?
Welcome, Candace.
Thank you. Can we get some legislators in here?
I don't know if we can.
Mayor and Council, it's just going to take us a minute as this wasn't, we have to go into Legistar to open this up.
Okay.
Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, we have it up on our screen here.
Okay. Can we put it on the TV so I can reference the document? Thank you.
There it is. Magically. There it is.
So I'm looking at the financial forecast attached for the next couple of years, and I want to make sure that I'm understanding this correctly. So in the years of 2021 through 2023, what utility rate increases are we assuming in order to end at these reserve balances?
Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, the only adjustments to utility rates that we have in here are the adjustments that were presented over this last month, the month of October, to Council. There are no utility rate adjustments assumed in any of the other fiscal years.
For this specific forecast, all of the forecasted years then, all the utility rates are all, it's like assumed at a 0%.
That's correct.
Okay. And the other thing that I noticed is in fiscal year 22-23, it's showing a 7.8% ending reserve balance in the financial forecast. Help me understand the legalities here. I thought we had a council policy that doesn't allow us to fall under a reserve balance of 8 or 10%?
Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, the financial policies call for us to maintain a fund balance between 8 and 10% in both the enterprise fund and in the general fund.
Okay, that can just be changed at council's discretion then. So
it's between 8 and 10%. And so when we go to the forecast over those multiple years, that's usually the target that we're looking at, is to stay within that 8 to 10%.
Okay. And the I know that typically I'm used to seeing a five-year forecast, but it looks like we only have three. Are we projecting that our reserve balance goes negative in 23-24?
Yes, we only went through the fiscal year that would put us, that had us dip just below the financial policies. So the year after that, we would go below financial policy.
And that would put us at what, negative something?
I don't have that in front of me, but it would probably be a negative if you look through. Again, this is a forecast assuming no rate adjustments and assuming that all of the debt service and expenses stay as forecasted. If you look on that and you look at the total net sources and uses, it is toward the bottom. You can see for fiscal year 22-23, the forecasted net sources and uses is a negative $43 million.
Yeah, that was my other concern. All of our utilities, water, wastewater, solid waste, electric, and natural gas are all projected to go have a negative net income starting in 21-22. Is that correct?
That's what the forecast calls for.
And there's no concern from the budget office that all of our utilities are going negative? Has this ever happened before?
If you look back at fiscal year 18-19, you can see that they were all in the positive. That is mainly due to refinancing of our debt, our existing outstanding debt. We hope to be able to do that in the future, although we don't count on that. And so we never want to count on refinancing our debt in order to save money. But we have fortunately been able to do that for the last 3 or 4 years and save significant amounts of money. in these funds. So as we're looking over this forecast, again, we're always looking out to see where we're going and where we're trending. The other thing that also contributes to a negative net income on an individual program would be just the scheduling of the debt service. So the debt service will ebb and flow. So some years it might be higher for water, higher for wastewater, and next year it's higher for natural gas. And so normally we would see some of them go in the negative and some of them be in the positive so that it would net out. And that's usually what we want to look for.
So, and let me also clarify, Mayor and Council, this is a forecast. I can assure you that 1.1819 was in the negative too. And here's what the forecast is built into it. It's made an assumption of all the expenditures that are currently existing today, and I imagine with some level of inflation.
Correct.
It also assumes in there all the expenses related to the CIP that we presented to the council over the last couple of months. Okay. So it's fully loaded with expenditures, so it's very conservative. And it's so conservative that we didn't include any additional rate increases. So this is just is what the forecast is, really a sensitivity analysis just to show where things are if we didn't do anything other than build up, continue to spend the money at the same rate we're spending it today, and on top of that add the additional debt on new projects. So we can manage this several different ways. We can adjust the capital investment, we can adjust expenditures and roll back expenses, or we can do a combination of that and with looking at in the future either additional growth that may take place, or at some point we may come back to council, which we haven't done now for, we're not proposing any additional rate increases for residential this year, that in the future there may be have to look at modest increases there. But in this assumption, what you're seeing here today is very conservative. It's fully loaded up on the expenditure side with not any assumptions on the revenue. So just to show that. Now, when we come back during the budget season, we will look at this each year as it rolls out. We're within the, you know, the policy, and we'll just keep each year managing this and coming up with recommendations on either adjusting our expenditures or looking at modest increases in revenues. And we can, and that's how we'll address this going forward.
I think that answers all my questions. Thanks, Candace.
Okay, thank you. Council, any other questions about anything that's on the consent agenda?
I do have one other question on item 4L for the City Center. I know that our original budget for ASU was $63.5 million. Is that, are we approving $5 million as a part of that $63.5 million, or is that in a $5 million in addition to the $63.5 million?
So remember with the presentation we gave you Thursday. That amount includes everything for City Center Plaza,
the studios,
and ASU, the ASU building, as well as a little bit for some anticipated new growth. It's a very minor amount, but there's some of that in there.
Right, as well as system and reliability
upgrades. But we're taking all the contract. We're having the contractor who's going to be tearing up all the streets and the whole area to do all of it once. But no, not that. What's the number? We had the number last week. What was the number for offsite utilities?
In total,
for just the building, the ASU building.
The ASU building is just over $2 million, I believe.
That was about $900,000.
It's $2.4 million in total for the ASU building in offsite utility infrastructure.
Right, which when we came to council originally in the agreement, when we capped the 63.5, that number we estimated to council was between
$3 and $4 million.
So we're right in with consistent with what we presented to council when we entered into that agreement.
We say $3 or $4 million variance in
no budget allocation assumption of, I can't remember when we made that number, before we went into the agreement with ASU, we had engineering do a preliminary look to see what other offsite improvements would be needed outside of $63.5 million, and we shared with council that we anticipated that would be between $3 and $4 million.
That's correct.
So to clarify my original question, the $5 million, whatever that excess number is specifically for the ASU building, is in excess of the $63.5 million, not built into the $63.5 million. Is that correct?
That's correct. The original proposal agreement was that the city was responsible for $63.5 million plus all offsite improvements, And we estimated those to be between $3 and $4 million.
Are we anticipating any other unrelated costs that weren't originally allocated in the budget?
Well, these costs were assumed in the budget.
Yes.
So at this point, I'm not aware of anything beyond what we've already shared with council, whether it's offsites or the buildings themselves.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I should note that we currently have two items off of the consent agenda. But item 9B, the applicant has requested a continuance, I believe. So is that correct, Mr. Pugh or Mr. Lake? I'm sorry. To the December 9th meeting? Okay. So I think we'll move agenda item 9B to the consent agenda just to be continued to the December 9th meeting. So Randy, you have that, right? So the only item that will be off the consent agenda will be item 9A. We do, as we vote on this again, just because of the recommendation from P&Z was a split vote, whoever makes a motion needs to clarify whether you're moving for approval of the project or not, because it's a little ambiguous as to what the recommendation is. Does that make sense? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be a denial, probably, is what's recommended, yeah. If there's not...
It didn't pass.
It's procedural denial.
Procedural denial. But just so the record's clear, we probably ought to say whether we're supporting this project
clear,
or not.
Yeah.
Any other questions regarding tonight's agenda?
I would like to have a few of these taken off of consent. Sorry, I'm just trying to find 4L.
Okay.
8A.
Okay.
And 4M, N, O, and P.
Okay, 4 M, N, O, and P?
Yes.
That's the employment contracts of the city auditor, city clerk, city manager, and city attorney.
And 5J.
Okay, I'm sorry. Now 5J, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Randy, you'll have a short agenda. Okay, so just so we're clear, off of the consent agenda, we don't want to get this wrong, would be items 4L, M, N, O, P, and 5J, and 8A, correct?
Yeah. The original 9A, obviously, but yeah.
9A was always off, right?
Yep.
Okay. Great. Any other questions about tonight's agenda? Okay, the next item on our agenda for this meeting is to hear a presentation on the work of the Greater Phoenix Economic Council for the City of Mesa. Welcome, Chris Camacho and Bill Jibjiniak. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor, members of Council. Chris really doesn't need much of an introduction, but he's been at GPEC now for 11 years, and five of those as CEO. And the goal for this evening is to simply give an organizational overview and then how the partnership with Mesa has been performing. So with that, Chris, take it away.
Great. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Mayor and Council, for the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm excited that I made it on time because I was down in the southeast part of your community visiting with a client that's considering a major investment near Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. And so I was hustling to make it up here. So with that, I'm going to give a brief overview of not only the organization, but also the key work that we are delivering in terms of value for the community. And then I'll also give you a brief kind of view into the near-term future of some of the things that we're investing in to enhance our regional delivery system. So with that, very quickly, just to anchor you into the three areas of what we do for the community. So GPEC is a partnership of the public and private sector. We have 22 cities in metropolitan Phoenix that co-invest in our regional nonprofit. These organizations are constantly in transformational positions, whereby today we're roughly two-thirds funded by the private sector and about a third is the public sector funding, which is again comprised of the 22 cities and Maricopa County. We do these three things very clearly. We focus on the brand, so we're constantly out hitting the pavement, peddling the message of everything from e-commerce and logistics to aerospace manufacturing to trying to recruit headquarters to the market and many other industries, with the whole premise of bringing high-wage jobs to the region, which, again, is our intent to insulate ourselves, our region, against any future downturns. And again, what's occurred over the last 7 years with this kind of post-recessionary growth has been a pretty strong continued economic position away from residential and commercial construction, with more emphasis on industries like IT and financial services and manufacturing. So our goal is to go out and bring new companies to the region, and I'll talk about that here in a moment. So business development, branding, and then competitiveness is the third element of what we do, and that's everything from the meeting I was just in. We're talking with Chandler Gilbert and Mesa Community Colleges about the future of industry and how do we ensure that the Blockchain Institute, for example, or IT Institute here in Mesa, continues to be well positioned for industries like, or companies like, Cisco and Apple and many others, and staying on the front end of how we compete for industry. And I could get into a whole dissertation of how that trend has changed over the years in terms of taxes and the cost of doing business, the regulatory framework in which we provide, but more importantly, the emphasis on labor and labor supply is now the critical faction to how companies are making decisions today. So very quickly getting into our metrics, these measurements, as you see here, are simply the first quarter's worth of our results. So we are a board-governed organization. So we have a large board, which is comprised of a handful of Mesa representatives. And we're very proud of what we've produced just in the first quarter. But again, we're never settling. And so you'll see here just in the first 3 months of the fiscal year, 13 new companies have entered the market, about $1 billion of investment, over 3,000 phase one jobs, with an average wage of the high wage projects just under 71,000. Where we stand against our prospect goals, which are again set by the board, we use third party economists to establish the third party macro level economic expectations of the region, and then we synthesize that with our internal numbers, and that's where you see our 103% of goals are new qualified prospects that we bring to the region. 14% of those are international, and we're a dip under from where we were a year ago as our 17 numbers were off the charts. And so, again, we think our next 12 months are still going to be very, very strong, but I will tell you the 17-18 campaign was a really strong year for the region. And it was a 15-16 lead up into 17 where we saw the most significant results. A year ago, we had 50 new companies enter the region, and I'll talk about the Mesa results here in a second. So more specifically, this is the last 5 years of where these projects have landed, and you'll see by fiscal year in the upper right table. They're really spread throughout the region, which is really important as we drive our regional strategies. We're trying to communicate the value proposition of the market. There's varying assets that exist across the entire marketplace. So if we're talking to an R&D center, for example, out of Asia, and this is a real-world example, they're assessing many factions to this process. They're wanting to understand the reliability of power. They're wanting to understand the real estate access. They're wanting to understand the water and wastewater capacity of the municipal jurisdictions. They want to understand the labor supply. All of these ingredients go into the site selection process, and we're competing with other markets for these companies. So our job is really to support that due diligence leading up to a transactional process. In any given year, we'll have about 280 new companies entering the pipeline that are qualified, making a decision in the next 18 months. And our conversion ratio on average is 17%. So when we interface with those 280 companies, 17% of the time we win. The remaining balance is they select another market or they decide not to move and stay at their home base. So again, this is just a picture, an illustration of where these projects have landed across the last few years. One other important point to note: you see these cities, and I'll just use Southeast Valley because that's where we are, Tempe, Mesa, Gilbert, Chandler. When a company moves into these particular areas, on average, they impact 5 to 6 other jurisdictions, both in municipal tax base, but also in resident job access. And what that means simply is if you're on the border of a Tempe Mesa, for example, and your new union project right along the Mesa border there, really important as we build new commercial office space for this region, and specifically for your this kind of 101 corridor, that kind of access is critical from our standpoint because 83% of our deal flow asks for and requests existing space as they come and enter the marketplace. So in regards to kind of narrowing this down to the city of Mesa, the results over the last few years, you can see the overarching value back to the region. Again, we use a third-party economics group to assess, and this is Applied Economics, they assess the trade area value of a company going into, in this case, Southeast Mesa southeastern parts of the valley. And that'll impact a number of different jurisdictions in terms of where that physical plant or office is located, and then the shed, the commute shed and labor shed of where those residents are being drawn from. And that's what derives in our next slide the actual direct tax impact of our projects. And so on the left-hand side here, you can just simply see the 18 campaign and the 19th campaign, and that's our full cumulative impact to the region. So in terms of results, so we have a per pupil investment model, which again, on the public side, each of our cities respectively pay into this organization. It's roughly 40, just around 48 cents per capita per head. And that constitutes roughly $240,000 from the community of City of Mesa to co-invest with your other peer organizations. And what that does is then it's leveraged in a 2-to-1 model as I described from the private sector. So instead of being a public jurisdiction, we're able to go out and aggressively bring the right people in, do the right marketing to attract newcomers to the marketplace. And this direct return, as you'll see here, is again based upon third-party applied economics numbers, not our own numbers. So again, if there's any questions on that, I'm happy to answer those after the fact. So just in the last few years with the community, one thing I always challenge Bill and Chris and others as we work on our partnership is how do we and continue to build new product and build new infrastructure and keep employment corridors. And I'm proud to say, since we've had the conversation as we stood on the hill out in the Elliott Technology Corridor, and actually what preceded the Elliott Technology Corridor was a vision to extend extensive infrastructure into the Signal Butte area along with Elliott and Ellsworth. And what's occurred since that time is pretty significant investment in a number of major operational units. And as you can see also, as you're straddling the Gilbert Tempe Mesa Southwest Corridor, pretty significant investments as well in a number of med device and back office functions as well. So Mesa's been a great community partner of ours. Again, we're constantly working to challenge our team and the region to bring more and more projects to market, and then the communities compete for those projects. But it's really important from a standpoint that communities could go out and do this alone, but doing it in partnership gets so much more scale and value. So we're out meeting with these companies, Dexcom out of California, for example. They're assessing the market, and they don't know the difference between a Tempe, a Phoenix, a Peoria, a Mesa until they get on the ground, because the jurisdictional lines are blurred for them. And so that's why all these communities partnering together to go with one voice is critically important, and then the communities together go out and compete for these opportunities. So again, here's just a recent example of some of those projects. So just to finish, this is my last slide for today. Is this is what you're going to see in the FY20 plan. So we have a board of public and private sector leaders that help us devise this plan. My goal over the next 3 years is to really continue to elevate the Greater Phoenix brand. And I probably don't have to tell you this, but oftentimes the brand gets overlooked. Our region gets overlooked because of our reliance on housing and growth to drive our economic position. So we want to intensify that message, intensify the aerospace message, the semiconductor advanced electronics message, the deep-rooted capabilities we have in financial services continues to grow, so we want to be out there on the front end selling that vision. Obviously, we want to provide high-level support to the national site selection consultants that lead a lot of the corporate services projects, so we get in front of them regularly, which you see on the second note here. Third and fourth is really about driving operational excellence. We've launched a data science effort in the last 2 years, which integrates a tremendous amount of data intensity that allows us to not only find and seek out new companies, but also enables us to predict which markets are position our market in a better way so we can target those kind of firms that are more likely to invest in the region. And then fourth is continuing to foster relationships. We do a lot of work with our cities outside of the transaction. So it's one thing once the company's active. It's another thing to really understand and meet with Bill's team and dive into every single employment corridor opportunity and really try to work and grasp what kind of infrastructure, what kind of industry trends that we foresee that could help the community better position itself. And then lastly, looking at diversity, inclusion, sustainability, and in terms of how do we advance the region overall that all residents can reach an equal access of opportunity. And this is a very tough subject in today's environment. I won't get into it today, but on the national landscape, we're seeing pretty dramatic trends in have and have-not markets. And so the good news is Greater Phoenix is considered one of these top 15 regions for growth and prosperity. But we want to ensure that the entire region evolves. And that's not just certain submarkets, but the entire region across, you know, Southwest Phoenix to Southeast Mesa to Northwestern Peoria. And so these are all areas that we're focused on to ensure that we have an equitable approach to what we do. And then lastly is more of an internal cultural building process where, you know, I'm bringing in a new breed of teams that are within GPEC that's focused on the GPEC way, which is about intensity. It's about ensuring that we're community focused and community minded. And we're bringing a level of intellectualism that continues to advance the market and support our community. So that's what we're all about. I'm happy to answer any questions. And I just want to say thank you for the partnership we had for a lot of years. And I'll be happy to address any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. We'll start with Mr. Luna and then Mr. Freeman.
Thank you, Chris, for all that you do for our community. How do you work with the Arizona Commerce Authority in terms of what you do is related to the region as well as the state?
Yeah, Councilman Luna, so the Arizona Commerce Authority is the state organization, which is they're charged with driving investment and supporting job growth in the entire state. We're just focused on Metro Phoenix, where we work together very closely. The meeting I just left down at Phoenix Mesa Gate, we have an ACA rep talking about the state programs, the state regulatory environment, the tax environment, where we're focused on the region and the business case building of why that particular company in the aerospace sector should invest in the region. So the distinction is really we don't manage any of the incentive process. They do. They have a great handle on shepherding the process at the state level going through the different agencies. And then we're on the front end of very aggressively marketing as well as building the business case for the company.
Chris, thanks for the presentation. Can you summarize maybe the top three or four factors why businesses choose to relocate to this area?
Yeah, Councilman. So the first and foremost primary reason today is labor. It's labor access. It's labor availability. It's the P-20 system. And we have to measure today the throughput of what exists not only in the K-12 system in terms of graduation rates and enrollment within the community colleges and the four-year institutions, but also the technical schools and what kind of people are available within the labor pool today. So number one is labor. Number two is critical modern infrastructure that we keep investing in. So companies will not go into a commerce park that doesn't have the requisite water and wastewater infrastructure. So that's this term kind of site ready or shovel ready. If you don't have it, you're out. And so that's really important as well. And I would say an increasingly more topical area is quality of life. And it's just, are we building quality communities for people that's focused on, you know, multiculturalism? The arts scene is really important. So depends on the industry, because data centers care, you know, much more about redundancy of infrastructure, but technology companies and headquarters and regional headquarters care emphatically about the quality of the place. So those are the three or four things.
Thank you.
Mr. Thompson.
Chris, how much do we pay GPEC to be a member of GPEC?
So Councilman, the 2020 dues are right around $240,000.
I know that a few months ago, our downtown, Visit Mesa, did a pretty extensive report, I guess, that showed the council what the council was getting for their investment on everything from tourism dollars to hotel tax, ran the whole gamut. I mean, this was a year-by-year, here's what it is, here's what you pay us, here's your return on investment. Are you able to provide us something of that nature? Because one of the things that I've talked about often is what if we were to reduce our membership dues into GPEC and instead fund a marketing program or hire additional bodies for our economic development department to really kind of supplement what you guys do, but on a greater level, driving specifically those businesses directly to Mesa versus to Scottsdale and Tempe and Tolleson and Buckeye and so forth, but really driving those economic development opportunities directly to Mesa. So are you able to provide an in-depth, really kind of breakdown toolbox?
Yeah, so Councilman, to address your question, and I'm not familiar with the Main Street Mesa program returns, but I can talk specifically about our model. And so the screen reflects just under $240,000 is the Mesa contribution. The City of Phoenix, obviously, because of size, pays in a more significant value to the organization. And then obviously the county, too, matches the City of Phoenix. With that said, the slide illustrates the $55 return per every dollar invested in the organization. And again, that's with all these projects landing within the community drive a certain amount of net new tax revenue generation. And again, I glazed over this quickly, so I apologize, but we use a third-party economist group I don't know if they work with Mesa specifically, they work with the county and many other jurisdictions, and we have them evaluate when new companies come to market, the net new tax revenue that they generate, these projects generate, for that local jurisdiction, and that is what surmises the 55-to-1 return. So for your $240,000 investment, that is the return that we drive year in and year out. And if you're interested in more information, I can get the team, our research and analytics team, to meet with Bill and walk through this in greater detail if you're interested. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Luna.
Chris, can you talk a little bit about your international reach? I know that you're expanding in that area as well.
Yeah, Councilman, so the international market 10 years ago was fairly non-existent for us on the inbound side. We're about 2% of our deal flow at the time, about 200 clients were internationally based. Today, it's roughly, of the current active projects, about 300 different projects, about 25% are now international. And so with the numbers I showed you earlier, that's just this fiscal year. But the cumulative is really active. So we have a tremendous amount of activity going on currently in London. And so London's a beachhead market for us with our direct international flights. We're doing a fair amount in the Netherlands and Germany as well in terms of advanced electronics, IT, fintech, and blockchain. And on the Asia side, there's a pretty significant movement in the semiconductor value chain or supply chain, now evaluating the U.S. market for the first time in recent times. And so those are kind of the European and Asian markets. The Mexican market's been a really interesting one for us, where under this state administration, under Governor Ducey, there's been a tremendous amount of door opening in Sonora and in Baja specifically, but also in Mexico City. So we've been continuing to engage that process. Today, the majority of that engagement's in trade. So we do roughly $18 billion of trade, $17, $18 billion in trade with Mexico. I do believe over the next 10 years, you will see that Mexico's growth will drive, and what's happening around the world, you will see a North American competitiveness approach where parts of California, parts of Arizona, including Phoenix, as well as northern Mexico will compete as one economic region. And that's coming because a lot of the geopolitical strategies are becoming more insulated and more focused on sub-regions. And that's something that I do feel we'll need to compete as a mega region in the near future.
Thank you. Well, Chris, thanks for coming today. Thanks for, it seems like for the last several weeks, you've been in Mesa every week for a groundbreaking or a ribbon cutting, and we appreciate the good work that you do, all the great leads that you provide, and also the great work you do in our neighboring communities, because as you indicate, that the ripple effect is certainly felt in Mesa throughout for the things you're accomplishing throughout the region. So great. Thank you for being a great partner.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
You bet. Thank you. The next item on our agenda, Council, is item 3. That's to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. I know there's been a lot going on. Who would like to start us off?
David. Yeah, I'll start.
Okay, Dave.
Busy week. Let's see. Over at Red Mountain Mesa Community College, we had around 2,500 people attend the event. I want to thank Isaias for your hard work in setting that up. It was a very successful event. Also on Friday, we had Food Truck Friday over at La Senda's. At the same time, I went over to Jefferson Fall Festival for a great event with a bunch of kids and families. Saturday was a busy morning. We happened to have Mesa Citizen of the Year, Mary Camelli. Would you stand, Mary? So I had the opportunity to go to her house and wake her up. But fortunately for her, she was ready to go for breakfast. So congratulations, Mary. We look forward to having the event on February 18th. That was followed by an event over at Falcon Field Airport where we asked tenants to come and celebrate the having opportunities to just have some lunch together. That was a great event. And then the three of us,
Vice Mayor Freeman and Mayor, we went to Red Mountain Park where we had an opportunity to ride some electric vehicles, which is totally cool. I got to ride a Tesla, and I don't think I'll ever be able to do that again, but that was a cool vehicle. So we want to thank SRP for their participation as well as City of Mesa. And then, of course, we had a great GAIN event, and I want to thank Lieutenant Solar from Superstition. He was a great host, and we went to eight parties in Northeast Mesa. So busy day for me.
Thank you. Next. Jen?
I'll jump in there.
Yeah.
Saturday was a very busy day for all of us, but on Saturday morning I visited a Second Chance Fair at Mount Calvary Baptist Church of resources and opportunities for inmates to reintegrate into our society. I appreciate their work there. Also, that afternoon I attended a luncheon for Ignite College Council, which is Ignite is a group of that is mentoring and encouraging college-aged women, young women, to run for public office. And so that was lots of fun. GAIN Night, of course, we visited neighborhoods across. I want to thank Officer Brandon Kolonliski and probably COS for hosting me and taking me around to the neighborhoods. And that evening was Dancing with the Dinosaurs, and it was Oakwood Creative Cares, a fundraiser for their institution for Alzheimer's and dementia care, and it was at the Natural History Museum on the top floor. It was a lovely evening.
Thank you. Anyone else want to go? Mr. Freeman?
Sure. Thanks, Mayor. You know, I had a great time with GAIN. I appreciate Katie Brown helped organize it. I think we had like 16 different parties, but we could get just about half of them. But what I do like is Sergeant Lavin was able to pick me up, and we went to numerous of the meetings, had great food, got to interact with a lot of people in D1, and shadowed by fire trucks. It was a long evening, but it was very informational. One thing I took out of it is that there's some people that have consternation about recycling and what to put in the blue barrel. So maybe in the future we'll have a little bit more conversation about that and how to deliver that message. But it was a great time overall. So I thank staff and everybody for what they did.
Great. Thank you.
I'll just say as well, you know, GAIN events went to 9 in West Mesa. We want to give thanks to Commander Nesbitt from the Fiesta Station for taking us around. We even helped somebody. We were driving on Main Street. This person's tire fell off in the middle of the road, and we started pushing. We got off and we started pushing his truck to a parking lot nearby. So it was an eventful night and evening. So it is a great event. A lot of residents out there, you know, supporting each other and getting to know each other. So I ran into the mayor a couple events. So it was a good night.
Thank you. Yes, I'll just say amen to everyone who, if you live in a neighborhood that doesn't have a GAIN event, I hope you'll do something about that, because this is a great opportunity. The weather is perfect. You invite your neighbors out, you have a barbecue in the front yard, you rub shoulders with, you know, the folks that you wave at or ignore, you know, that live in your neighborhood. So it's a great way to get to know your neighbors. It's a great way to help fight crime. It's a very positive event. The city is anxious to support those events. You'll get city councilmen and firefighters and everybody come by to eat your food and say hi to you. So. Yeah. Again, if you happen to live in this, an annual event. If you happen to live in a neighborhood that's not organized like that, please take the initiative to do that, because the GAIN night is a lot of fun for everyone. I won't repeat what others have said, but one thing I didn't hear mentioned was Mr. Lester's funeral was Saturday. That was a great event. We appreciate the firefighters and police officers joining in celebrating Mr. Lester's service to our city. That was a great event. Anything else? Okay, Mr. Brady, can you help us with the scheduling of future meetings?
Sure, and then I'm going to ask if the Vice Mayor wants to make an announcement too. So first, next study session will be Thursday, November 7th at 7:30 a.m. Do you want to mention Tuesday, tomorrow night?
Yes, so I'm having a neighborhood meeting at Poston Junior High at 6:30 p.m., and we're all going to be there, a lot of staff. Thank you.
Okay. All right, if there's nothing else, is there a motion to adjourn this meeting? Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.